Green Man Blake against the Commonwealth of Virginia. Representative Downey, Assistant Public Attorney General, and our Attorney General, Matthew G. Martin, Senior Assistant Attorney General, the appellate.
Good morning. May it please the court. I am Alexis Downing, appearing on behalf of the appellant, Maureen Ann Blake, who respectfully requests that this court reverse and dismiss her convictions for failing to send her children to school, as that term is used in Virginia Code 22.1-254. The primary issue presented by this appeal requires this court to determine what, in fact, it does mean to send a child to school as it's used by that statute. As a starting point in our analysis, or in my analysis, we would ask the court to consider specifically subsection A of 22.1254, and we would submit to the court that that subsection is not a daily attendance requirement. That conclusion is borne out by resort to the rules of the statutory construction. More specifically, I would direct the court to the perhaps primary rule of statutory construction, which is that words should be given their plain and ordinary meaning. I would submit to the court that that statute does use the word attendance in later subsections. If it were the General Assembly's intent, that subsection A would deal with daily attendance, then the General Assembly specifically would have said, rather than shall send, that parents shall ensure that their child attends such school for the same number of days of hours as the school is in session. Rather, they specifically chose to use the word send, and we would submit to the court that the General Assembly chose its words with care. In addition to looking at the plain meaning of the words used in the statute, the rules of statutory construction also require that the statute is to be evaluated in context with the larger statutory framework. And what I would point out in that regard is that daily attendance is addressed in section 22.1-258. It's referred to as the backbone of the truancy statute. It does provide, after five failures to report to school, which I will colloquially call an absence, that direct contact is made by an attendance officer with a parent. That after a sixth failure to report, that in addition to this direct contact, that the attendance officer shall have a conference with the parent to determine what, if any, measures may be taken to affect or improve the school attendance.
Counsel, may I ask a question about your rule of statutory construction with regard to the words and hours per day? Send the child for the same hours per day. If the child is 20 minutes late for a school day that runs from 7 to 3, have they actually been sent to the school for the same hours per day as any other student?
Yes, Your Honor, we believe that they have, specifically because it's not a daily attendance requirement. This is a requirement that they sign up the child. So in this case, we're dealing with enroll. Enroll, I would submit to the court, is a term that is specific to public
this
schools.
This is a requirement that they sign the child up?
Yes.
And so if they never sent the child, they would not be in violation of this?
They wouldn't be in violation of this particular subsection. They would be in violation of the requirement that the child attend. And again, my belief is that that's addressed by 22.1.
So send the child for the same days and hours only means they need to enroll the child. Is that your position?
It means that they need to enroll the child for the full period of the school year.
But they don't have to actually send the child for the full period of the school year.
Not under this particular code section, that the actual daily attendance portion is addressed in another subsection, which is 258. So while the provision subsection A refers to for the same number of days and hours as the public schools are in session, we believe that that applies to the alternatives that have been provided. So it does address specifically a denominational school, private school, parochial school.
But it also addresses public school, does it not?
Public school as well, that's correct. And that public school is the barometer, if you will, is the ruler to suggest what is acceptable in terms of educational alternatives that the parents may sign their children up for. And that in signing their children up for those educational alternatives, that that alternative has to be in session for the same period of time as the public schools.
Okay, well, they've established the barometer, as you have indicated, for the same number of days and hours per day as the public schools. And then they include public schools again, send such child to a public school or private school denominational. So they've established the barometer, and then they require for the same number of hours per day and days per hour they be sent public school, private school, denominational.
And what that means is that they've got to be enrolled for the full school year. It's not sufficient to enroll a child.
If they wanted it to be enrolled, why wouldn't they say enroll such child for the same number of days and hours as opposed to send?
Enroll is specific to the public school. And I say that after reviewing every use of enroll in Chapter 14 of the title. And I can say with all but one exception, every time that the General Assembly uses the word enroll, it's specifically in reference to a public school. There are other terms that are used in various points, including the words admit or admission. Subsection A also talks about providing homeschool and having a child taught by a tutor or a teacher. In those circumstances, we believe that that satisfies the requirement that a child be sent to school, but that enroll would not be the word that would be appropriate to use in those circumstances. So here, because we are talking about children attending public schools, enroll is sufficient, but enroll is not necessarily synonymous with the requirement that a child be sent to school, specifically because there are those other alternatives that are provided for in that statute.
Counsel. I'm looking at the first subsection of 22.1254, subsection A, with which you're familiar. And I understand your argument. And it's a, I'll go so far as to say it's a plausible argument if the statute only included subsection A. But as you know, it includes B, C, D, E, F, G, H. That's about it. And those three pages include multiple examples of when a child would be excused for even a day or less than a day. Now, if indeed the General Assembly, through that statute, was merely saying enroll your child at the beginning of the year, and that's all that that statute was doing, then why within the same statute, not the same section, not the same chapter, within the same statute, 254, why would they then include multiple examples of removing your child for a partial day, a day, whatever?
Well, I think that's why it's important to review the statute according to each subsection.
I don't think we can do that. I think we have to review the statute as a whole if indeed your argument is will carry the day.
Well, my argument is that subsection A refers to enrollment. There are other subsections, as Your Honor pointed out, and those other subsections address different aspects of attendance because they do specifically use the word attendance. So subsection B and subsection D, for example, talk about being excused from attendance. Subsection C talks about being absent on a particular day. So subsection A, which is what I'm referring to specifically, when I say that particular subsection is not a daily attendance requirement, there are attendance requirements found in that statute as a whole. What I would consider more long-term attendance requirements, those are bases upon which a parent can apply to have their attendance excused. But subsection A specifically is what I'm referring to as applying to enrollment, in this case, enrollment being sufficient, but also other forms of signing up for education, including being admitted to a private school or a parochial school or a denominational school.
Do you have another argument?
I do. And if I could conclude, I would refer the court to, I believe it's subsection F, which talks about the alternative education plan. And this is a 22.1254, subsection E, talks about developing an alternative education plan. And one of those ways in which this alternative education plan can be completed is by counseling on procedures for re-enrollment, and that's the last, I would say, lowercase letter number there, pursuant to subsection A. I would submit to the court that certainly in this circumstance, for re-enrollment is somewhat synonymous with sending a child to school in that the General Assembly specifically references re-enrollment with regard to subsection A. I mentioned previously that SEND is inclusive of a number of alternatives that are available to a parent seeking to send their child to school. And SEND is also, this definition of SEND as enabling, the enrollment, enabling the child to be able to attend school is also consistent with the plain meaning of that word. As defined in dictionary.com, I think I've also cited Webster's Dictionary, someone that enables their child to attend school has thereby sent their child to school for purposes of specifically subsection A. To the extent that there are multiple potential interpretations of the word send, a construction favoring the accused is to be used. And that's so long as it does not produce an absurd result. And here, certainly in this situation where the children are validly enrolled and have attended every day, it is not an absurd result to suggest that she is not in violation of subsection 254. To the contrary, we believe that the result would be absurd where there is a daily attendance provision, specifically 22.1258, that requires 5 full days of absence before an attendance officer can intervene, yet the trial court and the Court of Appeals have interpreted 254 as imposing criminal liability for any portion of a missed school day, whether that is a tardy, a full absence, or an early dismissal. We believe that those provisions are inconsistent.
So it's your position that under 258, the attendance officer can intervene if someone is just tardy for 5 days or more than 5 days?
My position is that tardy is not specifically addressed by the statute. However, the Attorney General's opinion does seem to suggest that tardy would be in the purview of Section 258.
For intervention?
Yes.
But that, if you, even though you're tardy, you still get report, and you're there. You're attending for part of the day.
That is correct. But you know, I would make reference to the Brown and Ferris doctrine and submit to the court that you know, because the Attorney General had opined that 258 does include tardies, the General Assembly has not made any effort to change or address that, that tardies may be included despite the fact that they do not appear in the plain language of the statute. But by the same token, that Attorney
well,
General
Well, if we disagree with that, feel that tardiness cannot be, does not fall within the scope of 258, and if we adopt your position with regard to subsection A of 254, is there any mechanism in these statutes to address a child who is habitually tardy?
Well, there is 279.3, which does refer to the parent's obligation to enforce school attendance as well as the standards of disciplinary conduct.
But does it make it a criminal offense?
It does not. According to the Attorney General's opinion, it makes that a civil penalty. I believe there's a $500 fine. In theory, the court could proceed against the children or the parents pursuant to a CHINS petition, which is also not a criminal offense. And I believe that's what the General Assembly intended, was not to criminalize this behavior, but to allow a mechanism for families such as these to become within the purview of the court to apply whatever supports or services may be needed to address these challenges, certainly with regard to someone like Ms. Blake, who suffers from certain disabilities, if you will, but is making efforts, regular efforts, and maintaining contact with attendance officers to ensure that her children are at school every day and do receive the benefit of an education.
Counsel, how about 22.1-263? Would that be a mechanism to punish this person?
Well, 263 was part of the mechanism that was employed here, and there are several provisions under 263. It does make a violation a misdemeanor. And 263 does refer to various other code sections, including the 279.3 that I referenced, as well as 267 and 254, for which Ms. Blake was prosecuted. But again, we would submit to the court that 254 in this situation is satisfied by enrolling the child. So I don't believe that 263 in conjunction with 254 would be an appropriate mechanism.
But if you were correct in your argument that 279.3 would impose a duty within 263, the only mechanism to punish this person criminally?
It sounds like it would if he were proceeding under 263. However, 279.3 is sufficient in and of itself civilly. Perhaps it's a matter of escalating that the court would have the option to elect or the prosecutor at its discretion to be able to approve, choose an appropriate mechanism.
Okay. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. Kathleen Martin on behalf of the Commonwealth. To begin with, I'd like to touch briefly on the threshold issue in this case, and that is, as stated in our brief, that the appeal was improvidently granted because this was a misdemeanor conviction. There was no jail time involved, and it does not present an issue of significant precedential value simply because it was an issue of first impression and statutory construction. There's nothing that says that those issues cannot be decided solely by the Court of Appeals, and they do not have to be given extra approval by this court, as it were. So for that reason, we would say that this appeal should not have been granted and should be dismissed. With regard to the actual merits of what's been raised here, it is the Commonwealth's position that 22.1, 254 does apply to tardiness. The statute does not say that a parent shall enroll her child in school, whether it's public school or private school or some sort of alternative program. It says the child must be sent to school for the same number of days and hours per day as the public schools are in session.
Counsel, are you relying on the plain meaning of to send, or do you think it's an ambiguous term?
I think that the word send itself has a lot of different meanings and maybe different contexts, but I think that the plain common sense meaning here is that it has to mean more than simply registering your child at school. I mean, send means to transmit, to cause to attend, to be able to go. I mean, there are lots of different ways you can interpret that, but certainly...
To enroll would be one way.
But then when you look at all of these statutes in the whole article, and you look at the 254 as a whole, where it does have some provisions for a child's absence because of illness or religious reasons or things like that, that certainly you would have to say that the meaning of send, as the General Assembly intended in this statute, was that the child be enrolled in school and also show up on time for class, because it would just make no sense otherwise that you simply, okay, I've registered, but you don't ever have to go. But it's just not common sense to say that.
Well, if we're talking about common sense, it seems like the statutory scheme is set up so that if you miss days altogether, there's a mechanism to try to work with you, and after a certain number of absences, then there may be something harsher action taken. But if your interpretation of this statute is correct, if you're late one day by 30 minutes, you could be guilty of a Class 3 misdemeanor. Is that correct? Does that make sense then?
Well, in a technical, hypothetical sense, yes. If you were late for 30 days...
Well, it's not only hypothetical, it's what it says. If you're 30 minutes late, and if your interpretation of the statute is correct, I can be brought into court.
Well, but I think that you'd have to look at you know, the school itself is given some discretion in how this is applied. And you might be late, but there might be a valid reason for it. So that would be excused.
Let's say it's not a valid reason. It's not a valid reason. I'll go with the hypothetical. Not a valid reason. Am I going to have a $500 fine for...
But I think that if it only happens one time, you're not going to get that $500 fine.
I've got a really mean principal who's going to hammer me.
Well, And then if you have a mean principal, that's a separate problem. But I think that 258 also talks really about truancy. And the thing that the language in 258 is, really applies to situations where the students don't come to school and the parents are not aware of it and the parents don't support it. So it is really a sort of a different statute.
Right, but Ms. Martin, where is this exception for that you're talking about in 254A? Where is that? How do you get there?
I'm sorry, I don't think I understand the question.
Well, I mean, you're saying if the principal excuses it, then it's not going to be counted under 254A, and I'm trying to understand where the language is that supports that interpretation.
I think in subsection H, I believe it is, where there's language about how that the school board can set some policies and that kind of thing. So there are, within the regulations that the school would use, that there would be a way to create, not exactly exceptions, but to create some policy and procedures that would be followed. And what happened in this case was that the children, but in this period between September and January, there were 16 Thursdays when the mother was responsible for getting them to school, and they were absent for 10 of those. Now, after the letter was sent to her after they had been absent or tardy five times, and then they were tardy again, and then there was a meeting with the school. So the school itself, as was done in this case, it wasn't just the first time that they were tardy, but they called them into court.
Okay, but let's focus on, she was found guilty of three incidents, right?
No, she was found guilty of the five times she and what the trial court said was that after she had gotten this letter in November and she had the meeting, that then he would find her guilty of having the children tardy in December and January. And in those 2 months, there were six school Thursdays. And they were tardy five of those times. Three out of three in December and two out of three in January. And that's what she was found guilty of, was those actual times. And so, again, this was the fact that after the five tardies, the letter was sent, you know, that policy and the meeting and so forth, you know, that conforms to the way things are set out in 258. But 258 really is a different statute in terms of truancy.
But how do you reconcile those two things? It seems like the same problem, being late to school. How is that different from being missing school altogether? In fact, it sounds to me like missing school altogether is a more significant issue.
Well, I think that it probably is, but I'm looking at the language in 258 that talks about where the student's absent, and it says, and the parent isn't aware of it and doesn't approve it. So that's a different situation than what we had here, because the defendant knew that her children were tardy.
Well, let me stop you, though. 254 would also criminalize situations where my child was late to school and I didn't know it, right? I sent him off at the right time and he didn't get there on time.
Well, then I think that probably maybe would come more under 258 in terms of oh, you're not.
Okay,
not
so you can prosecute being late under 258.
And so, well, perhaps you can, but I also think.
Well, if you can, then why do we have it in two sections? Why do we have two different sections to criminalize the same behavior?
Because I think that the purpose of this statute is to make sure that children get to school and that they get an education.
Ah, enroll.
And
the purpose is to enroll.
It just makes no sense to say that you only have to enroll and you do not also have to make sure that they actually get there. And so I
agree with you, but I think 254 says you've got to enroll and 258 says you've got to get there.
Well, it's the Commonwealth's position that 254 does apply to tardiness in the fact situations that we have here or in a similar fact situation. And that 258 really addresses a different kind of problem. And the trial court relied in part on the Attorney General opinion from 2005, which said that the parent's awareness and support of the child's absence from school does not of itself allow to create absenteeism, tardiness, or early departures. Now, while that's not binding on this court, the General Assembly has not made any changes to this statute since that opinion came out, which shows that they agree or acquiesce in that interpretation. And there was a proposed change to the statute in 2006 that was not enacted. So, you know, if that had been enacted then, which did sort of hone in on tardiness, you know, then we could say, well, the intent of the statute to begin with was not applying to tardiness. But since it didn't pass, and there are many reasons why things don't pass, including that the General Assembly thought it wasn't necessary, you can't really presume that they didn't intend tardiness to begin with simply because there was this proposal that never came into fruition later.
Ms. Martin, what's your response to the appellant's argument based upon the language in 254E left that says procedures for re-enrollment to comply with the requirements of subsection A as support for the proposition or the interpretation of the word send to actually mean to enroll?
Well, I think that what you also have to look at the other subsections, such as B and C, that excuse the child from attending for particular reasons. Or D, that the child can be excused if he can't benefit from the education at the school. So I think that while that maybe particular subsection, you know, might talk about enrollment, there's also a section in the code, 22.1261, that pertains to children who are not enrolled in school. So I think that you could carve out some situations for enrollment, but still the overall intent in 254, where it says send your child to school for the same number of days and hours per day, really is talking about having the child be there for the day so that they benefit from the education, as it were.
Well, counsel, along this line, 254, the different subsections, some of them talk about attendance on particular days, but some of them really talk about enrollment altogether, don't they? It talks about being excused for religious reasons or other different things you want to do.
So, I mean, so
they've intermixed it. The General Assembly's intermixed attendance and enrollment in the same section.
You know, when the Attorney General's opinion, they said, you know, this really applies. It applies to absenteeism. It applies to early departures. It also applies to tardiness. And it would also apply, you know, if you're not enrolled, you can't attend. So, I mean, it's a statute that really has to take in a wide variety of things.
But you think 258 is the way to go for absences altogether, right?
And I think that the way 258 is set out, that really is like total absence where the child...
So you would disagree with the Attorney General when he says 254, or she says 254, applies to...
I wouldn't necessarily disagree. I just think there may be a little different interpretation that could be put on that.
So you like the part of the opinion that works for you and
well,
not so much
sure,
the part that doesn't?
Why not?
Okay.
So, I mean, I do think that In looking at this, looking at the intent of the statute, that the Court of Appeals was not wrong, and the trial court was not wrong when it did say that it could be applied to tardiness. And I've got just a few minutes left, so I'd like to briefly touch on the other things that we said
well,
in the
before
brief.
You move to that, I've been listening to this discussion intently. Justice Millett had a hypothetical that put him in peril of paying a $500 fine. And after listening to all this, I think your answer is prosecutorial discretion and school board policies save him from that.
Right. I think that.
Well, now, are you aware of any case that uses the existence of prosecutorial discretion to be used as a tool of statutory construction?
Well. No, I don't know that I know. I'm aware of a specific case. There may be one, but I don't know of it. But I think that when you're looking at statutory construction, you are looking at the fact that you do not want to reach an absurd result, and that certainly the defendant should benefit from.
I think that's what they're arguing, as a matter of fact, that sin does not mean what you say it means, or
and
it
so
would
I
be
think,
an absurd result.
Well. And I would take a different view of that. And I think that when you're looking at prosecutor discretion, that in the practical realm of the world here, to say that while it may not be a saving factor as far as construction, it's certainly something that the court can consider when you're looking at, you know, what is the common sense interpretation here, and that. The fact that we do have discretion, we do have policies, it just the facts in this case. This woman was not prosecuted because her children were tardy one time. They were tardy 10 times, and she was convicted of being tardy five out of six times within a two-month period.
But if we say that she could be prosecuted for being tardy under the statute, and even though her children were tardy on multiple occasions, what precludes someone from being prosecuted for one time of tardiness?
Hypothetically, probably nothing.
Okay.
But again, you come back to just the way the world works and common sense, and you know, I don't think that that would actually happen.
Well, we hope that it wouldn't, but we're looking for some language in the statutes to help us feel comfortable that it wouldn't happen.
And I think that you just look at the meanings of these words, you look at the Attorney General's opinion, you look at common sense, and that certainly there is reasonable way to say that the statute did apply to tardiness. The woman violated the statute. She admittedly knew that she did that.
You keep talking about the numbers matter, and if the numbers matter, I'm even confused by this record. I'm not that good at math, I confess, but the order says the court finds the defendant guilty of each offense that occurred after December 1, says multiplies the fine by 3. The Court of Appeals opinions say there were 3. You say there were 5.
Well, there were. She was convicted for, she had 3 children. She was convicted for each child. So
each child, so it didn't make any difference how many tardies there were. You said that there were 5 tardies, 3 children, and then if that's the case, if that's how we do the math, then it doesn't make any difference. The answer to the question is, one's enough.
Well, that's not necessarily true, Your Honor, because she was convicted for, and I see that my time's about to expire.
Go ahead and answer.
That there were 3 convictions because there were 3 children, so she got convicted for each child. But the children were all tardy on the same days. And what the court did said that after December 1st, and that was from December 1st to the middle of January, and that's where we get the 6 Thursdays, and they were tardy 5 times. And they were all 3 children were tardy all at the same time. So that's where the 5 comes from, and then the 3 was because there were 3 children.
Counsel, this has been an invigorating discussion about statutory intent and the definition of various words. 254 deals with compulsory attendance, as we've been trying to parse out. A couple of pages further over in the code is 22.1260, which deals with reports of children enrolled and not enrolled. And they're about several pages apart. Can we agree that the General Assembly uses both the term in attendance and enrolled, and therefore there must be a different meaning for enrolled than attend?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. We ask you a question.
Thank you.